Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share positive insights on how to live a healthier and longer and happier life. Today we begin with a study from South Korea, from the Suwon Women and Konghee Universities. It's about the vitamin B complex, something the average American seems to be deficient in all the time. It's not that difficult to get a B complex. I suggest 25 milligrams. If you're a younger woman and right before your menstruation, you could have extra B6 that helps lessen a lot of the pain that comes, not to all women, but many women. And that can help, as well as evening primrose oil. That's also good. But this study deals with the B complex and boosts your cognitive ability, especially if you're older. Older in America today is relative. For example, when I go back to my reunions, I see less and less people. They have passed. And the ones that still are there look like my grandparents. And you have to ask why. And the answer is simple. I'll bet many of you, when compared to your siblings or friends or relatives, who have not taken your approach to life by exercising and watching your body weight and how to deal with stress more appropriately instead of personalizing everything, making everything a drama and a crisis. And one of those, can we talk? Can we talk? No, we can't. Someone doesn't want to talk. They want to, you know, try to put you in your place, show you're wrong about something. We have enough of this nonsense. We have way too many important things that impact the world and us to get caught up in feeling bad or feeling that we have this angst, this existential angst just won't go away. We wake up in the morning with some sense of foreboding. Yes, we have a lot of problems. A lot of those we can resolve. A lot more we can prevent, but only if you pay attention to what you're doing. So here, if you're 40, you may be 80 biologically. If you're 80, you may be 50 biologically. That's how fluid on the spectrum of how we age and how we age prematurely, and therefore the diseases that come from premature aging, like diabetes and obesity and pain throughout the body and problems with high blood pressure, etc. Or you can be a person that is older chronologically, but really keeps yourself fit biologically. I haven't released it yet, but I believe I'm going to release it this coming weekend or on Friday on this program. I want to be able to show you a group of people who over a period of 3 years were in a anti-aging study. And with one of these individuals, I just want you to pay attention to how he looks physically. And he's in the gym and you see him. Now, if you were to simply put your hand where his face is, you would guess he was in his 20s. And strong and cut like a bodybuilder, but he's not. He's 72 with two life-ending illnesses, neither of which does he have today. In fact, he's getting the medical records so that I can write up a new study about all the people in our anti-aging study who came with pre-existing medical conditions that were not being successfully treated. Today, all of those are gone. Then they're also younger at the biological age. And we've proven that too. I'm going to get into that in some depth, but it's extremely complicated. So complicated that the seven scientists that were on a conference call with the university that did the study in relationship to our study, it was a parallel study. So we did our blood work up before and after, and that was all done by a Dr. Vogel. You got to get these blood work up, Dr. Goldman. You got to get these blood work up because it's objective. So if you have a very high C-reactive protein and very high homocysteine, that means you're far more likely, 2, 3, 400% more likely to die of a heart attack. At the end of the study, wow, you know, those levels are way down. That's objective proof that something works. And then when you duplicate that 5 out of 5 times, then you've met the gold standard for good science. In fact, of all those scientists that were on the line and people involved in the study, no one could understand the coding that this university has. It's extremely complicated because it deals in just deep DNA, and they're the world's leader in what they're doing. And they, in the meeting, they said, we'll tell you right now that you added 2.2 years onto a person's life. How about that? That's not been done before. And that's in addition to reversing your pre-existing diseases. That's not been done before. And so you're going to see it in the people I interviewed who had pre-existing medical conditions. Now, in the future, I'm not going to allow people with these pre-medical conditions in, because that also, could you imagine the results? If only healthy older people were in the study, it could mean that we added 5 or 10 years from this point on in just 2 weeks on campus and the rest at home. So what if you did this for a full year? That means, theoretically, you could be adding 15 to 20 years onto your lifespan. This is real important information, and it's grounded in really good science. And I had nothing to do with any of the evaluations. I only saw them after everyone else had finished their calculations. But now it's in for peer review publication. It's gone through all the hurdles. Why am I saying this? Because when we talk about boosting cognition, we're finding people from long COVID are losing their cognition. They're prematurely aging their brains. I mean, we've never seen a phenomenon like this in American history. There's never been a medical condition, not Parkinson's, not ALS, nothing that ages your brain as fast as long COVID. I mean, it's a major, major problem. But now the good news is that with B vitamins, you can help slow that down. I'm not saying it's been proven with COVID. There's other protocols that can bring your memory back, yes. But I'm talking about protecting your cognition, especially younger people, not just older people. Because younger people, because their lifestyle, their diet, how they deal with stress, being deficient in all the right supplements that you need, we're finding they're going into cognitive decline real early in their 20s and 30s. And therefore, people who are living a healthy lifestyle, as I know many of you are, if you're 40, and by the way, when you're 40, you're on the downside of life. When you're 50, you don't got a lot of time left. When you're 60, take a deep breath, because the clock is ticking. As the Buddha said, you think you have time, you don't, if you're living the normal life. So I don't want you living a normal life. I want you to give up a normal life. I want you to live an extraordinary life. One that challenges all the preconceived notions of, well, I'm not going to do that. That's too hard. I don't want to give up my bacon and eggs. Okay, then every time you have bacon and eggs, how many hours are you taking off your lifespan? Because of the inflammation you're causing, the DNA damage you're doing. People don't think about this until they get older, until they realize, how much time do I have left? I just had a phone conversation with a friend of mine who's 86. Right now, the COVID pandemic took about 3 years off our lifespan. 3 years. Our lifespan for the average male now is around 75. That's not long. Well, he's already 10 years past the average lifespan. Now, he did get vaccinated, but he's now using protocols to undo the damage of the vaccine. And that's good. And I'll be explaining more of this on an upcoming program. But his cognition is really good. I mean, it's excellent. And why? Because all throughout his adult life, and I've known him for the last 40 years, he's been a close personal friend of mine, he really pays attention to most of the things he does. And that's important. Because when I said, why don't you add in there this particular phosphatidylserine, acetyl-L-carnitine, he did it. Now, I have another friend who's the same age, all right? And he doesn't have good cognition. His cognition is way bad. You have a conversation, a half hour later, he didn't remember you had a conversation. Now, he functions, but his short-term memory is just gone. So, simple information, not difficult to understand, but not so easy if you're the average person to understand that living the average American lifestyle, you're wasting your brain, it's atrophying, it's irredeemable, you're going to have mild cognitive impairment if you don't change. Interesting, because I'm asking people to make radical change, and they're wanting ultra-conservative change. I don't want to be that healthy. I don't want to be one of these health nuts. I don't want to be an extremist. You don't see anyone on television. You don't see Rachel Maddow. You don't see any of these dancing clowns saying, let's be really healthy, do you? Never. Because they're not. They have no knowledge of it. They're totally ignorant. So why follow them when you can look at the examples of people who've done it just the opposite? They make their health, their mental well-being, their sense of self, the core of their life. Because when you do that, everything else you want to do, you have the strength, the insight, the mental faculty to facilitate what you want to do. It's that simple. Now, another study, and this is from a college in India, the Vijay Institute of Medical Sciences, they found that a few things can increase your strength and endurance. And this was published in Food and Nutrition Research. It resulted in improvements in muscle strength and endurance among men who received what is known as Indian thistle, and also the fruit mangoes. Yeah, mangoes, something delicious, something you can get year-round. And this was compared to a placebo, so it's really good science. So Indian thistle and mango can help you have more strength, more endurance. And this was against a placebo. All right, wasn't much either. Don't have to have a lot. You don't have to eat a bunch of mangoes every day. Just one mango will do it. All right. But again, we're showing functional foods, foods that function in your body in a very good way. Now, this is from the Shenzhen Institute of Advanced Technology in China. And what they're saying is people who regularly use laxatives may have an increased risk of dementia. We shouldn't have to use laxative at all. There's some conditions when women are pregnant, they may be bound up because there's pressure with the developing fetus against the internal organs that can cause that. But if you're eating a good, healthy, plant-based diet, getting lots of liquid, healthy water or juices, and you're getting good fiber, you're going to have normal movements. If you're not, if you're eating the standard American diet, yes, then there's a high probability you're going to be constipated, congested, and have autotoxemia. You're not going to have good bacteria in the biome in your gut. You're not going to have a strong immune system. In fact, just about everything you can do to harm yourself, you're doing. And since you're not stupid, I rarely meet stupid people. I meet people who act stupid out of compulsions and impulsivity that I'm hungry now. I want that food now. I don't want to go to the farmer's market. I'm not going to go to the health food store. I'm not going to go home and spend 7 hours cooking. I want something right now. And then we have these people who then, well, you have time today. It's Saturday. Go to the farmer's market. No, why should I? I can go right over here and I can get a big breakfast and I'm satisfied. Every single item in that breakfast causes inflammation. Not a single thing in that breakfast promotes health. Not a single item. And that's also true for your lunch and for your dinner and all the beverages you get. And you've all seen the commercials. You've seen these stupid commercials. Come into our place, and we're going to give you pancakes and bacon and sausage. We're going to give you hash browns. And we're also going to give you a big banana split, all for $2. God. Why don't you add in the cost of the medical bill to treat all the diseases that a person's going to get from eating this? But that's not done. So if you use laxatives, because you haven't been eating right, you've been overstressed, you're keeping your stress in your, that old saying, you make me sick to my stomach. Well, the stomach is just not the stomach, it's the whole digestive process. Stress creates problems with peristalsis, the wave-like rhythmic movement to get food through your intestine. The more calm you are, the more relaxed you are, the easier digestion. The less liquids within a meal, have them before a meal, have them an hour after the meal. But then you don't dilute hydrochloric acid, the pepsin, and all the other enzymes, lipase, that are in your stomach to digest the food. Instead, you just overeat too many calories. So think about this. Think about getting up from a healthy meal where you haven't eaten all your food. That's a good idea. Think about eating where you still are hungry. That's a better idea. Think about not eating from dinner to breakfast, intermittent fasting. That's a phenomenal idea. And you know what all these have in common? They're backed by high quality science. It's not myth, it's reality. So when you have laxatives, you have a 50% increase in developing dementia than people who do not use laxatives. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, the medical journal for the American Academy of Neurology. Good news for those people who suffer from multiple sclerosis. According to a study from Providence St. John's Health Center, you can help reduce the symptoms of multiple sclerosis substantially by using high dose of the omega-3 fatty acids that's in this animal study. Now, we all know that multiple sclerosis is a chronic condition in which the immune system attacks the fatty layer known as the myelin sheath surrounding nerves. This in turn reduces the ability of nerves to carry signals, and studies show that diets rich in the omega-3 fatty acids are linked to lower multiple sclerosis rates and have beneficial anti-inflammatory neurological health properties. So I just want to let you know that if you take the omega-3 fatty acids twice a day, you're turning off the inflammation and that improves the neurological health properties of your neurons and your cell. The DHEA is important, and the DHA is important, and it can reduce the immune T cell response and thus reduce multiple sclerosis related inflammation. And by the way, DHEA is a mother hormone. From that, many other hormones are made, and as we age, that really declines. And it's been shown to have an immune regulatory properties, and at certain concentrations, to be able to significantly suppress the production of monocyte chemotactic protein, or MCP, a cytokine that plays a pivotal role in chronic inflammation. So it turns off the flame. So you need DHEA. You should have your level checked, a simple blood chemistry, and then for most people, it's around 20 to 25 milligrams a day. Makes a big difference, because from that, other hormones can be produced that you need. So just want to help people. And by the way, tahini is a paste made of sesame seeds, and it's a staple in many Middle Eastern cuisines. Raw and unprocessed tahini is what I advocate, without any additional oils or additives. And it could be a superior food medicine, a functional food for preventing heart disease and the risk factors associated with it. A study from the Archives of Medicine reveals tahini as a possible substitution for risky drugs like statins, drugs prescribed for heart health, but really don't make your health a heart healthier. And they're known to have a lot of dangerous side effects. The study looked at the effects of tahini in type 2 diabetics. People are known to be at a greater risk of cardiac death due to higher than normal blood lipids, high blood sugar, and insulin resistance. They looked at the patients. They divided them in two groups. Group A was given 2 tablespoons, that's 28 grams, of tahini with their breakfast every day for 6 months. Group B functioned as a control group and didn't receive tahini at all. Aside from that, the number of calories in their breakfast and throughout the day were kept the same. The groups were tested at the beginning and at 6 weeks for various cardiovascular risk factors, including blood pressure, triglycerides, and total cholesterol. After only 6 weeks, significant changes were noted. After 6 weeks, there was a decrease in what is called the serum TG and the AIP in group A. Moreover, slight decreases in serum TC-LDL cholesterol and other atherogenic lipid parameters, meaning the lipids that cause our heart and vessels to become diseased. So it worked. The group that didn't have tahini didn't have any change. The group that did have tahini had a 39%, one item, one inexpensive, nicely tasting item, can easily be put into meals, smoothies, caused 39% decrease in atherogenic index of plasma. And that's really significant, particularly since the only thing that changed in group A was the addition of just tahini. That's it. We're talking about one item. Now show me a drug, any drug, that can reduce your risk of heart disease, heart attacks by 39% in a period of just 3 months with no side effects, no harmful side effects. There is no such drug. But I can show you, tahini does that. I can also show you what happens with magnesium and potassium and rebalancing, getting sodium as we take it now out of the diet. So, in fact, sesame seeds are comparable to the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen in the treatment of knee arthritis, able to reduce pain significantly without any side effects. Did you know that tahini is a pain reducer? I don't care what kind of pain you got. Try 2 tablespoons of tahini each day for 3 months. Only good can come from that. By the way, finally, from the University of Toronto, excess screen time is linked to suicidal behavior in U.S. preteens. Yes, according to the University of Toronto, amidst the worsening teen mental health crisis and new legislation proposing to ban children under 16 from using social media, a new study finds that greater screen time among children 9 to 11 is associated with a higher risk of developing suicidal behaviors 2 years later. This is published in Preventive Medicine and finds that each additional hour of screen time is associated with a 9% higher risk of reporting suicidal behavior 2 years later. Wow. And by the way, in particular, extra hours spent watching videos or playing video games and texting and video chatting led to a higher rate of suicidal behavior. Didn't know that? Yeah. That's the downside, the dark side of social media. Thank you all for watching. If you're just going to watch this segment of our program, you can go to Gary and All on, go to Rumble and look at Gary and All Film Library. Go to Odyssey, that also carries all these, and also GaryandAll.com. And we also are doing a series, a really good series, and I believe a life asserting in a positive way and changing series is called Classroom on the Air. And right now, for the next 2 months to 3 months, every single day, it's about an hour lecture on how to deal with the emotional issues, the issues that we're all facing, but dealing with it in different ways, some constructive, some destructive. It's very inspiring. It's very upbeat, very positive before a live audience. So it's a good watch, and it's free, all right? And you can also go to Gary and All YouTube. I have thousands of programs on there you can download. All good. But for everyone else, we're going to take a break and come back because we have a lot of good stuff to share with you today on a lot of other topics. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary and All. I'm using this form now to try to stimulate interest in topics that the average person thinks about, but generally doesn't say anything about. So here's a group of people. These are random clips, and there's probably about 8 of them. They're anywhere from 30 seconds to, I think the longest is a minute. So people are just getting an idea out there. Now you can agree or disagree with them. There are people I disagree with here. But I don't just have people on the show or present information I agree with. That would be boring, and it wouldn't be fair. I want to hear all kinds of ideas. In my world, everyone's invited to the table. They can exclude themselves, not want to come, but at least you get a healthy discussion from different points of view. I'm interested in your point of view. These people are sharing theirs. What is yours? Give us a call, 888-874-4888. We hear from some people on a regular basis and hear from most people, never. Everyone has an opinion, share it. Don't be afraid that, and as you see, I'm never, ever hostile to anyone on the program. I believe in being responsive at a humane level. So you can share your points of view. I may differ with it, but don't feel bad. You know, this is not a battle of words or ideas. It's just sharing different perspectives. Our perception. All right, now to this series of clips. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. How many times have you heard someone say something on the radio or on television, one of these talking heads, and you think, that's stupid. I can give a better insight on something than that person, and possibly so. But what are we lacking today in the United States? We're lacking the cohesive ability to have a discussion that is done so with people sharing points of view, where you can agree or disagree in part or whole, but you can do it in a civil manner. So what we've done is Rodney and myself have taken a group of clips, short clips, some are 30 seconds long, some are a minute long, they're all short, on different topics, and we're going to present them right now. And then I'd like for you to call in and share your view. What is your perception? What is your opinion? Again, it's not about being right or wrong. It's not about that at all. This is just to get people to think, because this is one form that I don't censor. I don't exclude people. You've never heard me get angry at someone or yell at them or call them any name. I would never do that. I've never done that in my career. Even when I disagree with someone, I have people on the show all the time I disagree with. But it's just, these are ideas. They're just insights. We can choose what we want to keep and what we want to discard. So we're going to go to this clip now. If you want to respond to any one of these clips, that's why we selected a whole variety on different topics.
I know somebody who has a good friend who runs a corporation. He hired a young woman, and the young woman was normal, whatever, no problems in the interview. She was kind of a star. She shows up the first day and says, I identify as a tiger. He's like, what? She's got to wear the little ears and the little tiger tail, and everyone needs to be respectful of her identity as a tiger. Now, this is not gender identity. And I would say, as a lawyer, you as an employer do not need to recognize this or do anything other than tell her, put on your normal clothes or you're fired. This is not a protected mm-hmm. class. But we're so crazy about bending over backwards to support this nonsense.
Yeah.
We're letting kids do that. Like, it's becoming bigoted to say no to that.
Why is it making my blood boil that Kristen claims to have a gynecologist? Part of it is, I just actually went to the gynecologist. It's never particularly pleasant. The exam doesn't feel particularly good. The pap smear is very uncomfortable. No one looks forward to that. We actually have things we need to worry about, like ovarian cancer, things that are particular to that exam and that relationship that no fucking man is ever going to have. All right. So that guy doesn't have a gynecologist. That guy has a hole that a surgeon created at best. There are things that make women special, and there are things that we've overcome and that we must overcome as women in order to thrive in this life, whether it's the threat of sexual violence or, you know, being attacked as we walk home from college bars to our dorms, the fears that you have when you go to the gynecologist, all those things, they're baked in. And it's part of what makes women so incredible and strong. And you can't just become one and take all of our things because you did or did not have a surgery or you put on a dress. It doesn't work like that.
The Twitter files have been unleashed from the deep depths of Twitter hell. And what they ultimately found is that Elon Musk and Elizabeth Warren have something in common.
Okay. You have my attention.
The Twitter files released by Elon show that a group of small people made massive decisions about what content is allowed on the platform at the behest of Democratic Party officials. And according to Elizabeth Warren herself, that's not how Twitter's supposed to work.
Republicans say that Democrats are picking on Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is doing just fine.
But do you think that users have a right to freedom of speech, even if what they're saying is wrong or offensive?
I think that one human being should not decide how millions of people communicate with each other. One human being should not be able to go into a dark room by himself and decide, oh, that person gets heard from, that person doesn't. That's not how it should work.
Oh, the irony. Look at Elon, bridging the gap of partisanship by exposing elitist Democrats.
Women are not attracted to this. It's this wimpy man that we're producing, and I'm not even talking about just wimpy men, but wimpy women. Everyone's offended all the time. It's not attractive. It's not attractive for either sex to keep seeing men talk about their feelings. I'm so hurt. Nobody cares. You know, you're all over. Literally, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And my suggestion to everyone would be to stop apologizing for such meaningless stuff. I personally, people always say to me, Candace, why don't you go back and, you know, delete the tweet you sent 10 years ago? Did you mean the tweet that you said 10 years ago? I don't know. It was 10 years ago. Maybe at the time I did. Human beings have this idea now in the age of technology that we're not allowed to grow up. There was a time in my life where I thought Barbies were the coolest thing in the entire world. If I had a Twitter back then when I was 4, I would have been like, Barbies are the best thing ever. Now that we've gotten into this habit of saying, well, this is what you thought 20 years ago, so this is what, like, you're supposed to think forever. That's not how evolution works. Human beings need to be able to evolve. You may say I've evolved since then, but we have to stop apologizing.
I am so tired of talking about woke culture, because one of the tenets of wokeness is, of course, that your feelings matter more than the truth. And the only thing that wokeness has to offer in exchange is to brainwash bright young minds like you to believe that you are victims. We are told that your generation cares more than any other about one issue in particular, and that issue is climate change. I will join you in worshiping at the feet of St. Greta of climate change. This country is responsible for 2% of global carbon emissions, which means that if Britain was to sink into the sea right now, it would make absolutely no difference to the issue of climate change. You know why? Because the future of the climate is going to be decided in Asia and in Latin America by poor people who couldn't give a shit about saving the planet. A third of all children who live in extreme poverty in the world live in India.
One day, Albert Einstein was teaching his class and wrote on the board, 9 times 1 equals 9, 9 times 2 equals 18, 9 times 3 equals 27, and he continued all the way up to 9 times 10 equals 91. The class broke out in laughter because Einstein made a mistake. The correct answer to 9 times 10 is obviously 90, not 91. And the students began to make fun of him. Einstein waited for everyone to be silent and said, "Despite the fact that I analyzed 9 problems correctly, no one congratulated me. But when I made one mistake, everyone started laughing. This means that even if a person is successful, society will notice even the slightest mistake." So today's reminder to you is that mistakes are a part of the process. Because as Einstein once said, the only person who never makes a mistake is someone who does nothing.
To me, when people say to me sometimes, like, "Boy, you know, you go after the left a lot these days. Why?" I'm like, "Because you're embarrassing me. That's why I'm going after the left." But I think we should have one national anthem. I think when you go down a road where you're having two different national anthems, colleges sometimes now have, many of them have different graduation ceremonies for black and white, separate dorms. This is what I mean, segregation. You've inverted the idea. We're going back to that.
Everything that Bill said there is now conservative. Yes, we shouldn't have two national anthems. I don't know what he meant by we should maybe change our national anthem. No, we shouldn't. But yes, they're teaching racism in school. They're teaching this hyper-racialized thing in school. It's coming. There's no liberals to stand up for this stuff.
So I did a post about Joy from The View saying this.
Here's the thing. Once black people get guns in this country, the gun laws will change. Trust me.
So I stated that what she said was racist, and it is racist. And here are some of the ignorant comments I received. "I think she is saying that because of the racism of the GOP, treating an issue differently for people of color." Please stop using the phrase "people of color." It's just the Democrat rebranding of the word "colored." Here's another one. "I think her point was that because of racism, they would make strict gun laws if people of color bought more guns. She needs to clarify." What these racist Joy apologists don't know is that black women are the fastest growing group of gun owners currently in America. And guess what? The GOP, your big bad boogeyman, isn't making more gun laws. You are.
Is your answer to young people for some of the really big problems facing humanity, like the, you know, climate catastrophe, like economic crisis, like the precarious job market? Because they just don't, like, you talk all this much about individual responsibility. Most of us are never going to be able to afford to have all of these assets to have responsibility over. So what is your advice beyond banal comments like "clean your room"?
Well, you know, it's actually rather difficult to answer a question that ends with "your comments are banal" politely. I would consider that more of an opinionated, personal, and political statement than actually a question. So why don't you try reformulating that so that there's an actual question there?
doesn't want a girl that's just going to be naked all the time and put herself out there available for every man to see. Mm-hmm. You know, that I don't have to be a man to know that that's not what men want, right? If you think that that's freedom, the idea that you have to wear less, the idea that you have to get naked to be heard, do you really think that's a form of freedom? Because that's not. That's slavery. That's bondage. I didn't have to take off my clothes to be heard in society. And these women will realize that when you follow these people that are, you know, self-imposed feminists, I'm a feminist, I do this, I'm a feminist, you hear that word over and over and over again, you'll find that the majority of them are miserable. Mm. Look at their lives and ask yourself a question. Do you think they are happy? Mm. Do you feel good when you do what they do, right? When you're constantly looking for a dopamine hit from social media because you took your clothes off and you want somebody in your comments, you know, a thirst trap with your ass out, right? And you want someone in your comments going, oh, you slay, bae. You slayed the day, bae. Hashtag Tuesdays, am I right?
Yeah.
The Russian Revolution in about three seconds here. The idea is this: society is deeply unfair. The rich and powerful, the 1%, we could call them, the 1% control everything, the aristocracy, the czar, they have all the resources, and everybody else is essentially a slave. And what we need to do is we need to create what they call the dictatorship of the people. They created a bloody revolution. They killed the czar, the royal family, murdered them all, executed them all. And then they began to go after everybody else, everybody who had some kind of status or power in the pre-existing structure. For example, in my grandmother's case, they had a horse. That was enough for them to be considered wealthy. People came to the house with guns, kicked them out of the house, took all their property, and exiled them to Siberia. My grandmother, who was a little girl, remembers her little brother begging for food on the way, and they didn't have enough food, and he starved to death on the way.
Okay. You've seen the clips. Do you have any response, any feelings? Do you agree, disagree? All that's important. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, didn't we hear George Bush say, you're for us or against us? Didn't we hear Bill O'Reilly, that bloviator over on Fox, say, you know, you're either with us or you're with the enemy? How stupid and immature, how childish. But we're doing it again. I want you to see this information.
Neutrality is not an option.
As Annalena said, there is no neutral position when it comes to a war of aggression. There is no balance.
Western governments have effectively told the world, you're either with us or you're against us. The foreign ministers of the United States, Germany, and Ukraine made comments in which they said that the world cannot be neutral over the proxy war in Ukraine. Essentially, the West is telling the Global South, you have to join us or you're our enemy. You're with Russia. These were comments that were made at the Munich Security Conference on February 18th. This is a conference that is held every year in Germany, and it brings together Western leaders, including heads of state, but also especially military leaders and corporate leaders and NATO. It's effectively a NATO conference. And there was this, an event held featuring Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, the German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock, and the Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba. The U.S. State Department published an official transcript of this meeting on its website, and you can see here, all these three foreign ministers criticize neutrality. They say neutrality is not an option. You have to give weapons to Ukraine. There is no neutral position. You really can't be neutral.
Neutrality is not an option.
As Annalena said, there is no neutral position.
I have an article about this over at geopoliticaleconomy.com. I will link to it in the description below, and you can find all of the sources that I discussed today. Now, we should keep in mind here that Germany's foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, is extremely hawkish. She's a neoconservative, and she gave a speech in January at the Council of Europe in which she said, quote, we are fighting a war against Russia.
We are fighting a war against Russia. We can fight this war only together.
So when the German foreign minister criticizes neutrality, she's saying that you have to join us in this war against Russia. In her comments at the Munich Security Conference, she said neutrality is not an option, and she said that the world has to give ammunition to Ukraine.
Neutrality is not an option, because then you are standing on the side of the aggressor. And this is a plea we are also giving next week to the world again. Please take a side for peace, a side for Ukraine, a side for the humanitarian international law. And these times, this means also delivering ammunition so Ukraine can defend itself.
After Baerbock said that, her comments were repeated by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He said, there is no neutral position. You cannot be neutral.
As Annalena said, there is no neutral position when it comes to a war of aggression. There is no balance. We're constantly engaged with partners around the world who have different perspectives on this, different ways that they can help. And from our perspective, first of all, again, you really can't be neutral.
And in his response, Antony Blinken was responding to a question from a journalist from Saudi Arabia. And he said that Saudi Arabia has taken a semi-neutral position. We did not support the invasion, they condemned the Russian invasion, but we decided not to cut relations with Russia or China. That has been the position of the vast majority of countries on Earth, which are in the Global South. I'll come back to that point in a bit here. The most disgusting comment, which was just blatantly, honestly racist, came from the Ukrainian foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, and he said that we've seen an unprecedented unity on one part of the world that stands for principles and rules. So he's saying the West. He's saying that the West stands for principles and rules, whereas the Global South are apparently, according to the Ukrainian foreign minister, barbarians and are lawless. And he said, in other parts of the world, he's referring to the Global South, which is the vast majority of the global population, over 6 billion people. He says, some of them are neutral, which means effectively the support of Russia.
Yes, we see an unprecedented unity of one part of the world that stands for principles and rules this world is based on. But we also see other parts of the world. Some are neutral, which means effectively, you know, the support of Russia. Some are calling on to cease the supply of weapons to Ukraine, which also means that Russia is going to win.
Now, the Joe Biden administration loves to talk about multilateralism and the rules-based order and all of this, you know, discursive propaganda that they're not actually committed to. But the reality is that their ideology, their unipolar, hegemonic, imperialist ideology is the same as that of George W. Bush, who famously said, you're either with us or you're against us. You're with us or you're with the terrorists.
Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
So when Antony Blinken says the world can't be neutral, that's the exact same ideology. And he might couch it in...
Sometimes on the BBC, which is, man, that's completely controlled by the deep state and the government over there, there's just no objectivity. But sometimes they get a comeuppance, someone talks back to them in a way that they do not have the facts on their side, cannot properly respond. This is one of those.
Well, you said it yourself in the introduction that it's all about the context. And I'm afraid there's a very large number of people commenting on this story who haven't seen Jerry Sadowitz or haven't seen his show. And it's a very interesting thing that seems to be applied only and exclusively to comedy. Like if you go to watch Macbeth with your family, you don't come back going, oh, I saw a play and then this guy went mental and stabbed his friend. You go, it's a performance, it's a theatrical performance. And the character of Macbeth and all the other characters in that piece are characters, theatrical characters, in exactly the same way that Jerry Sadowitz's act is a comedic character. And so what a character may do is completely different.
Yeah, I've seen Jerry Sadowitz live in the last couple of years. I went to see him myself. He is very offensive. He is very challenging, but he's not an obvious character. It's not like Steve Coogan playing Alan Partridge. He comes on and maintains this act as he has done right through his entire career. And it's not obvious necessarily what he's doing and how he's doing it. But let me ask you again my initial question.
Not necessarily to
everybody in the audience, but let me just go back to my first question. Is it ever okay then to use overtly racist, sexist, homophobic language in a comedy show?
Well, as I explained, if there is a character that is doing a performance, then they may be able to do things that a person expressing their opinions may not. This is one of the problems with what the Pleasance has done in this case. Instead of saying we don't like his material, what they actually said, if you go and read the statement, is we do not agree with some of the opinions Jerry Sadowitz expressed, as if a comedy character is the same as a person's opinions. And this is the problem. We seem to have forgotten that, yes, some words are very offensive, but he didn't say them on the BBC One Scotland show. He said them in the context of a very specific comedy performance. I strongly, by the way, disagree with you that it's not obvious that this is a character. I remind you, this is a man who exposes himself on stage as part of his act and has been doing this for a very long time. Going to a Jerry Sadowitz show and being offended is like a vegan going to a steak restaurant and being horrified that there's dead animals on the table. It's ridiculous.
So what we have here essentially is a venue censoring an act. Does that concern you as an industry? We're already hearing reports tonight that a venue in Dundee is now considering a gig that he's supposed to be doing there.
Well, it's not something that concerns me. I've been talking and writing about this for many years now. The comedy industry is going to be destroyed by this process because what will happen is people like me and many others who want to do challenging things and push the boundaries, they're going to go online, and then you're not going to have the stand-up tour in the country in anything like the same way. It would also mean over time that the Edinburgh Festival becomes less appealing and fewer people will come and perform there and fewer people come and watch shows there. We have seen only in recent years the cancellation of the MASH report, the cancellation of Mock the Week. I'm told that Live at the Apollo is next. This culture of censorship and restriction is destroying comedy, and it will destroy the TV comedy that many millions of people have been enjoying for years, as it already has done with other shows. And this process will continue.
Yeah, just speaking from a personal experience, as I said, I went to see him a couple of years ago in Constantine. One thing that I found actually quite troubling that night was I sensed that quite a lot of people in the audience were there so they could laugh at a bit of racism because they don't get the chance all that often. Does that trouble you?
If I were a mind reader like you, it would trouble me. I have no idea why the people were enjoying his show. I have more faith in human beings than perhaps you do. I believe that people are able to understand irony and very clever comedy that Jerry Sadowitz does.
Well, as you correctly point out, I was there, you weren't. I was watching what was going on around me and trying to assess who thought what about it. But listen, it was fascinating
to
hear.
How did you assess that? Sorry.
Well, just by judging, by watching people watching their body language and listening to them around the venue.
You can
tell
venue. What someone thinks
no,
from
I'm
their
not.
Body language.
No, I'm not saying I knew what they were thinking. I'm just saying it struck me that that might have been the case.
No, you did say you knew what they were thinking.
I said I was concerned they might have been. But listen, we are out of time and it's been fascinating to hear your opinions this evening. Constantine, thank you very much indeed
for
being with us this evening.
We're going to take a break now and come back because I'm interested in what you have to say. Also, I'm going to bring you up to date on a lot of different information in a lot of different topics. Oh, here's something that you're going to see when we come back. They say that the official inflation went up in January. We don't have February figures yet. We will. And now it's 7.45%. Wrong. The actual inflationary prices are anywhere from 15 to 30%, depending upon what you're buying. But how about you buy a car? All right. How much are you going to pay now versus just a year ago? A huge difference. I didn't even know these facts. And I like to keep up on all the things. And I want you to see these because you're going to see the actual official statistics, what you will pay per month, depending upon buying a normal car. We're not talking about fancy cars, expensive cars, Cadillacs, Lincoln, Porsches, none of those. We're talking about a normal car. You know, here's what you're going to pay. That's almost 100% increase per month. Who can afford that? And he says it. Who can afford that? Yet we're saying we're prosperous. Some are. Over 250 million Americans are not. Why isn't their story being told? How many are unemployed but are not a part of any unemployment number? The shadow statistics shows that we're about 24% actual unemployment in the United States. 24%? Yes. Well, who's telling their story? No one. And yet, their story will be told on this program We'll go to the clip and after we come out of the break. Again, I'm interested in what you have to say. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. And we have some really smart people in this audience. We have people call in and make some very good points. Please do so now. Back in a moment with your calls.
Welcome back, everyone. And as promised, we're going to go right to your calls. We have Sonia from the Bronx. Hi, Sonia. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for all your wonderful, wonderful work. I just want to mention I do have trouble getting through on this phone line for months at a time sometimes. But anyway, I just wanted to say that this gendering, this depoliticizing us, this censorship, I think it's a good tool for transitioning us to transhumanism. I think that's the ultimate goal. There doesn't seem to me to be any other purpose to turn us all into just individual, the same individuals, no difference, nothing. We're all the same. And I think it works for transhumanism and for the future robot society that we'll ultimately have.
We're not just ultimately going to have a same mindset society, but Elon Musk, who's opposed to what can happen when we're seeking consciousness in robotics, and that's a news story I was going to report on today. There's a group of industry wonks who are all into artificial intelligence, and they're really joyous that now they believe that in the very near future they will be able to establish the first artificial intelligence with conscience, meaning they're fully conscious. If you're conscious, you're able to make decisions. But what happens when a artificial intelligence can make a decision that they no longer want to be serving anyone else's interests and look at humans as being, you know, their masters and they want to be free? Could you imagine what they could do to destroy life as we know it on this planet? And that is where we're going, and yet there is no stopping these people. They're on a mad rush out of greed and stupidity to create something because there'll be a market for it. And indeed, there will be a market. The military-industrial complex will have a market. At the other end of that is Elon Musk with his brain company wanting to insert a special type of chip into your brain that will be able to manifest how you deal with life and thoughts, etc. So either way you look at it, we are now, when people start getting chipped, that is the first stage of transhumanism. And then they'll sugarcoat it, making it look really nice. And yes, we are being told that we have to conform. And everyone conforms, you're fine. If you disobey, you're an enemy. If you challenge, you're an enemy. We've already seen this. Every single social platform, every single one, censors anyone who challenges the status quo, including censoring if you wanted to challenge Elizabeth Warren in that clip. She would go along with your censoring because she has supported Facebook and Google and Wikipedia and all these other corporate and deep state forums. So yes, at this level, you are right. They want to control us. Now, using binary principles, first you have to come to just a simple realization. And as a scientist, I can tell you, if you're a man and you want to declare yourself a woman, that's your business. I really don't care. You know, what you do with your life, your sex life, your body, that's yours. I just hope that you make sense of your choices before you make them. Allowing an adult to make it, they have to be responsible. If there's a better outcome, good for them. If there's a lesser outcome, shame on them. But now you're talking about children as young as 3 years old. And some are even claiming, oh, a baby once knows what its true sexual orientation is before they're even born. This is the absurdity of people who have no sense of real science. Now, if you want to show me any man who transitioned to be a woman, and I'm not going to tell you not to, right? That's your right. Now show me how that woman can have a period. Show me her vagina. Show me her womb. Show me her fallopian tube. Show me her eggs that can be fertilized by the male sperm. Show me her period. Remember one of the first things they did is put all the sanitary napkins in all these male restrooms? That was a symbolic gesture with no science but all politics. But we've become a society with no common sense, no reason, no historical balance, and no real science, as we saw with COVID or anything else we've done, as the war on AIDS. Real science saved lives. corporate science took lives. So look at it from that perspective, and you'll see their policies are. Thank you very much. I appreciate you calling in and sharing your points of view with us today. That's Sonia from the Bronx. See, the listeners have so many interesting things to say. Please keep calling. But in the time we have left, we only have 4 minutes. I just want to give a little heads up. This coming Friday, I'm going to spend a lot of time, because it's going to be really interesting, and for a lot of people, hopefully motivational, to give you the official results, which I can now release, of our fifth anti-aging study. And especially since it was there was a dual track, one from a major university's anti-aging division that we could never use. You can't order their test, but because of the results we had in the first four, they allowed us to use that, and those results are absolutely objective. And then we have our own clinical study with other results, blood workups, exercise workups, Hamilton Depression Scale, overcoming depression, anxiety. I'm going to deal with all that on Friday. But today I just want to let you mention, my first mention, that we do something as a fundraiser, and it's called a health retreat. What's it about? 1 or 2 weeks, because we're going to do 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks of May. We invite people to one of the most beautiful environments in America. It is bucolic. It is beautiful. It's in the hills of northeast Texas, around Arkansas and Louisiana. There are lakes. There are animals. There's workshops galore, and I'm bringing in a whole lot of new workshop and new workshop leaders. And this one, we're emphasizing energy healing. You're going to have workshop on Qigong, Tai Chi, all these other workshops. Mitchell Raven's coming in, who's spent a lifetime studying this and practicing it. We have yoga. We have, and we have a wonderful yoga teacher coming in to teach. We have meditation classes, mindful meditation classes. We have a plethora of classes throughout the day that you can take as many or as little as you want. We also have counseling to help people with their issues. We have exercise in the morning. We have one of the top exercise physiologists, and, well, she's not technically a physiologist, but she's gotten all of her certifications in water aerobics and biking, in weight work, and she looks 20 to 30 years younger than her age. You'll see her. Phenomenal teacher. We have master chefs, vegan chefs, gourmet meals, juicing, drinking the healthiest juice you could ever imagine throughout the day. We have a form of intermittent fasting. We don't eat between dinner and breakfast. You can do as little or as much as you want. We have time in the day for you to be with nature. Just go to a quiet, beautiful place, sit and reflect, meditate, journal, write, whatever you want to do. For those of you who are stressed, it's a great place to be. For those of you who want to deal with life from different points of view, it's a great place to be. All right, if you're interested, this always fills up quickly, and it's reasonably priced because that was taken into account. I donate my time, so give a call to Luann. She'll see if it's right for you. Detoxify, de-stress, rejuvenate, and repurpose your life. I'll be doing many lectures, all new, brand new. You've never heard them before. I just finished them, sent them over so that they can be captioned, and we're putting our cameras everywhere so a group of scientists around the world can watch what we do every day to monitor our next study. Call Luann at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008 if you'd like to join me. Real quick, because I got to go to Utrecht, Rick from Virginia. Hi, Rick. What would you like to share with us?
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, just 3 points. A lot of this stuff, a lot of these problems are happening downstream from the two-party system, as you're probably well aware of, and your audience is probably well aware of. So I would make 3 points. Number one, the two-party system is based on single-round voting. So like the state of Maine and the state of Alaska, if we have more rounds, meaning more choices, more designations for each voter, being able to rank your choices up to 5, up to 6, that would eliminate the two-party system. That's number one. Number two, we don't really need names on the ballot. We can have just a totally open ballot. Then we'll get rid of the primaries, and we'll have a more open, free system. Number three, we need accountability. We need to be able to get these people out of office before 6 years, 4 years, et cetera. Those are the three things that I would start with first.
Good for you, Rick. All positive inputs. And, of course, you could have added a fourth on there, and that is start populist parties that work together as coalitions. Separate what you don't want to agree with and work on what you can agree with. Take the money out of politics and take the deep state and other special interest groups. You talk about being downstream from the two corporate parties because they're both corporate parties. Neither one of them are honest. Neither one of them serve the public interest. I appreciate your call, Rick. Thank you very much. We're out of time, everyone. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with you, Therese Lead. She's live in the studio with a brand new program for you. Have a nice day, everyone.